Because we have so much to learn from other African countries in terms of inclusivity and that sort of thing. But we also have so much that we can contribute. Absolutely. And I like the fact that one of the first things I read when I saw the announcement was, there was a big statement, it's about driving financial literacy and inclusion.
Absolutely.
With the aim of transforming the financial landscape in Africa. Okay. So, Rian, maybe just to start the conversation off, just tell us a little bit as to what is the fintech, Sanlam's new fintech cluster? And we spoke now a little bit about the aim, but maybe a little bit more about, you know, just how did you put this together?
Tony, I sort of joined after it was approved at the board level that this will be established, and I was then I came in with a mandate to now make it work. But if you were to go to the Sanlam public documents of a year or two ago in the integrated report, it talks about Sanlam 1.0, Sanlam 2.0, and Sanlam 3.0. Sanlam 1.0 and Sanlam here talks the Sanlam group. Sanlam 1.0 is a 105-year-old business, been around for a long time, very successful business. But the reality, the future of that business doesn't necessarily lie in where it came from. The target market is essentially a relatively small target market, and where it's been successful. And I mean, that came the other day, like what's the other day is probably 3, 4, 5 months ago when Capitec published their results to say that they've got 20 million clients. The Sanlam Group, or Sanlam, the old Sanlam Life, in a sense, probably has about 2.5 million clients. So you can just see there's about 20 million clients that we've just never targeted. And I mean, the reality is the future growth of the business will lie somewhere else. So that's Sanlam 1.0. Sanlam 2.0 is the almost future-proofing of that business, digitizing it and taking it to the future. And then Sanlam 3.0 is building the future Sanlam model, which is a sort of largely non-intermediated digital model, opening up new markets, new revenue streams in South Africa and outside South Africa. Now, Sanlam FinTech is essentially Sanlam 2.0 and 3.0. And it's important that it sits in one place because it needs to end in the same place. You can't future-proof the old business and it ends there, and then we're building the future business model, it ends somewhere else. It needs to end in the same place. Yeah. And why it was decided to have it as a separate cluster is Sanlam, as we speak today, as a group, is a successful business and doing very, very well. And it's very difficult if you're in flight to fundamentally change the business. Priorities always go to what you're doing now, as opposed to what we should be doing in future. So whenever you try this, what I'm explaining now in terms of what we want to do is not unique, Tony. You've heard it from everybody else. Everybody talks about this is what we need to do. But to in a sense, to have the courage to take this out of the old business, put it alongside all of the other businesses as a cluster. So if you look at the Sanlam Group, you would have Sanlam Life, Santam, Sanlam Investment Group, Sanlam Allianz, and then Sanlam FinTech. So it sits at that level. It's got a clear business mandate, profit motive, all of those things. Funding has been set aside, and with a very clear mandate that you must change the way we do things. And in a sense, I've probably got a bit of a license to do things differently, because there's a realization that the environment in which you have to create this cannot be the old environment. It needs to be agile. You need to think radically different. And we've been given a license. So I applaud the board for making that decision and doing that. So that's what SFT, it's a cluster that's got a dual mandate. Number one, build that future business model, but at the same time, future-proof the old business because it has to get into the same place. And fortunately, given the fact that the group has been doing, dabbling in sort of digital and fintech type of things, we're not starting from nowhere. So all of the existing so-called digital assets were thrown in the pot. So you had Indy that was started about 5 years ago as a life insurance insurtech. You have Yashua that's now called Santam Switch, which is a beautiful short-term insurance insurtech that's built exactly the way those business should be built. And full control, end-to-end PaaS, front-end, small team, and with the leads being on the tech side and thinking about clients the whole time. You have MyWay Blink. That's this sort of digital version or initiative of the MyWay team. We have a large shareholding in Easy Equity, so that's also been put under Sanlam FinTech's control. We have a payments business that was established in the either early 60s or late 50s. Almost remember in Momentum, years ago, you had MC Squared that was then sold to F&B and became Hyphen, which really is the payments business. Sanlam has something similar called Multidata. It's been around 60 years. It handles about 400 billion of payments a year, 60 million transactions. It's a massive payments business. And because the future of digital side, payments play such a key role there. That's also been put in the pot. And then Sanlam Credit or Sanlam Personal Loans been put in the pot. And I want to tell you the story. I wasn't there, but why it's part of Sanlam FinTech. And when this was presented to the board last year, now, as I said, I wasn't here, so I'm telling a story I've never heard firsthand. And it was explained that what we need to build is this sort of digital mall, all right, in future. So Patrice Motsepe listened to this and he said, geez, my father was a shop owner. And my father always said the success of the secret to success for a shop is to have fresh, warm bread at the back of the shop, because the smell draws you into the shop and then you walk past everything else. And he said, so you're building this digital mall shop, what's your warm bread? Which I thought was a very apt question. And the reality is credit is a warm bread, because credit draws clients to you. If you've got a good credit offering, you know, in insurance, nobody wakes up in the morning and say, I need life insurance. You need to somehow go out and sell it to them. But people do wake up in the morning and say, I need credit, I need money. And then they
want a house.
That's why the Sanlam Personal Loan business that we've been in 22 years in that game, we actually have a big lending book, a very, very attractive lending book. And that's also been put part of Sanlam FinTech. So all our digital assets were given to Sanlam FinTech. And our job is now to pull all of that together to build this sort of future business model, which is obviously, as I said, largely non-intermediated, completely digital, and understands that clients want to engage with us radically differently going forward. So build it in that sort of context. I don't know if that makes sense.
It makes a whole lot of sense. I think what I want to try and figure out then from you is this is now anchored in FinTech, as you spoke. I liked your analogy about the loans being your warm bread, because effectively you have to change client's behavior to be able to get inclusivity.
Yes.
And although it's about the loan, it's attracting them, etc. But to really get financial inclusion and inclusivity, it's not just about punting loans.
Okay.
So how do we change that behavior to not just focus on that and not see anything else as just, I have to do this?
Tanya, I think it's a very good question, and it's absolutely correct. That's not what it's all about. What we believe, and I mean, there's still a lot that we need to do and demonstrate, that if you look back 200 years when insurance started, or a couple of hundred years ago, the man of the proof. Insurance, strangely, was always there for the man in the street. It wasn't built for the wealthy. Over time, somehow, financial services have moved to become like where it's wealth management and all of those things. That's not what it was.
Mm.
And a key part of what it was originally, that man, the man of the proof that walked from door to door, the home service, and there's a little book that you write in and you give him like £1.05 and you trust it. There was trust in that relationship, all right? Mm. And so there was like advice and guidance, but trust. I listen to my advisor. My advisor I can trust. And I think for the first time, given the conversion from a technology point of view, AI point of view, and all of those places, we're at a point where we can deliver, we can democratize trusted financial advice. Mm-hmm. And our views, we need to give that out essentially free. It's unconditional because you can provide access to somebody, but if somebody doesn't really understand what they are getting, it's not true access, it's not true inclusion. And historically, if you look at the, say, the entry-level markets, they had to live without advice because they can't afford advice. And the advisors, it wasn't financially viable for the advisors to go into that market either. Now, a lot of advisors are going to do it with technology, so they're also going to do that. But we absolutely fundamentally believe we're now in a position to democratize, as I said, financial advice or guidance or coaching, and through that, and create greater financial confidence. And then through that, you will create inclusion. So it's an unconditional thing for us. It's not a product sell or product push. Is if, and I'll tell you what, I often test things in the Uber, especially in South Africa, given our economy. So I mean, my discussion normally is, do you own the car? If you don't own the car, how much do you have to pay a week? And I want to understand the Uber drivers sort of, but then I always test ideas. So I ask a few of them, if over the past few months, if you think about something where you think, geez, if only I could have spoken to somebody, all right? And because that would really have helped me make a decision, what would that be? And a couple of people came up to say, everybody needs money, but the lending process is actually not a very nice process because you have to go into something, you have to disclose your whole life to them. And then often you don't get the answer, so you feel rejected. And in the process, you know your data is out there now and you're potentially on some sort of list. So people said, if I could just speak to somebody beforehand to say, listen, do you think I'll get a loan if I go in now? And you create a trusted environment where you engage with the person, maybe say, man, listen, it's not the right time now. Maybe if you can cut this expense and do that in a year's time, you can do this. The people said they will pay for that. Mm. And it's almost that type of democratizing trusted advice environment that we would like to bring into this whole thing. And that talks a bit to behavior. But the other thing on behavior, Tony, that, and I mean, it's always been part of any business book that you have to understand your client's needs, all right? But it's almost, the reality is often we don't. We design these things in the corner office in the ivory tower, and we take it out and we push the product, and we don't really understand what the clients want, but the clients don't have a choice, so they take it. Yeah. And the other thing that I think is important here, and again, technology allows you to do it. If you live in a world where you don't sit here and you design this product and work for 2 years on the product and then launch the product. You say, I think I've got an idea. Let's just have a basic version and we test it in the market. And we come back and we say, no, it's not what they want. And you iterate that whole process. That also talks to appreciation that behavior is maybe not what you thought and behavior has changed. And you need to understand that. And that's what we want to try. We want to try and create an environment where it's much more of a world of, it's almost, I mean, I'll talk to some of the people that we've brought in because they've brought a lot of that thinking from the Googles and the Amazons and whatever into our thing is just testing, get feedback, go back. And in 2 or 3 months, you will have a product that you know people want, but yeah. You haven't sat here and you've designed this massive thing and spent millions and then like push it out there. So I think that talks a bit to behavior, but the big thing for us in terms of how we think we can and sort of have an impact is by democratizing advice. Now, Tony, you know, in the top end of the market, the robo advisors are everywhere. So that's going to happen. But nobody, as far as I'm seeing, is saying there's an opportunity to really bring that trusted advice out en masse to people. And it's not a conditional thing. You don't need to give the product to us. I sit here, I'm sitting here in the Sanlam and Bellville head office. If I look across the street every day, there's these queues at the SASSA office. And I mean, I'm just thinking that what would, if I were to go to one of them and say, and this thing works for them in terms of giving them that confidence to make the right decision, I think it would change their lives. But they sit there now without any choice. Sorry, I'm preaching a bit. But that's our thinking here.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's exactly what I wanted to hear, you know, is that that core as to where this comes from, you know, and where it goes. Now, Sanlam already has a really good footprint across Africa, probably the biggest footprint across Africa of all these companies. And so practically, how do you see this working with that footprint? Because that footprint's also reasonably independent per country.
Yeah, it is. Tony, the reality is our immediate focus is in South Africa. We need to make it work here. And I think there's a massive market that still there isn't inclusion in South Africa. South Africa hasn't been fully transformed. So we need to make it work. It's that thing, how do you eat an elephant? Like bite by bite. We think once we've established and we know what to do, we need to be successful in Africa, because if you're in the fintech business, it's low margin business, so scale is critical. You're not going to make it with 1 or 2 million clients. You need to have tens of millions of clients to make this work. So that's the one thing that so in terms of the rest of Africa, there are two opportunities that I think give us as a group a unique and sort of potential advantage. Number one is the Allianz partnership, and that's engaging with, as you say, they're independent, but I mean, we would know who's leading the thinking in terms of, for example, digital journeys, and engage with them. Just interestingly speaking on that, a while back we had a board webinar on AI, because all boards need to get there. So we had two very good speakers. And the one guy, it's an ex-South African that's now part of Google's, what's it, Deep Think or whatever the thing is. He also runs sort of AI education throughout Africa. Do you know which country is leading AI thinking and in Africa?
No.
Tunisia. South Africa is right at the bottom. He's saying we generate maybe 5 to 10 people a year that can really play a big role in AI in this country out of the universities. Whereas Tunisia is miles, miles ahead. So I think there are things that we can learn from them, like the example like this, but there are also things that we can do. So the one part of the strategy is just very close collaboration between us and in Sanlam Allianz business. But the other partnership, you know, we've got this exclusive partnership with MTN for financial service in Africa. I'll just give you this, and I'm going to get it wrong, but I think MTN does something like 54 billion transactions a month. Now, a transaction is I buy data or this and that and whatever. 54 billion, Tony. So the contact with the clients, the engagement with the clients is just incredible. Now, if you can just somehow ride on the back of each of those transactions and try and understand what the sort of needs are and build it on the back of that, you can deliver it at a cost of acquisition which can be sustainable and valuable to the client. So for us, that partnership gives us, I think, potentially a massive competitive advantage in sort of rolling out our sort of fintech ambitions.
So, Rian, thanks so much for that. It was fascinating. Now, sort of the last question, which is a little bit off the bat, what excites you the latest in terms of fintech and insurtech?
Yes, there are so many things to pick out one. And the thing on a personal level that it's not part of my experience, I'm still on a massive learning curve there, is just what's happening globally in terms of payments and in South Africa as well. And I mean, payments underpin everything. I mean, financial service ultimately is just a movement of money. And if you see the type of innovation going on in the claimants, even with something like a PayShap, which hasn't really worked well here in South Africa. But every day I speak to people about a new idea to sort of make payments better for the client and quicker, and outside of this sort of existing banking rails. So I think there are a lot of very, very exciting things there. And remember, why is that important for any fintech business? If you live in a non-intermediated digital world, it's critically important that there's a lot of engagement with clients. And because the more you engage, the more you create that trusted environment as well. But the more engaged around payments, the more you get data that's useful to then give back to the client. So payments is critical. So fortunately, in the group again, if you look at the wider group, we have TymeBank, and in a sense, in the wider Sanlam group, and when I say Sanlam, it's at the ARC level, and because ARC's our biggest shareholding, and then obviously the majority shareholding Time as well. So we think we can actually deliver something very, very exciting in terms of payments to our clients, and digital banking, digital payments, and all of those type of things. And we believe we can do it without having to start a bank, because I'm not convinced that any new bank that's going to start, firstly, I'm not convinced they're going to get a license, because the regulator is saying, what are you bringing to the market? I mean, we've got Time, we've got Bank Zero, we've got Discovery Bank. I mean, you have to come with something radically different. And I think the fact that we can have this sort of exclusive partnership with the Time Bank also gives us an advantage to do fantastic stuff without actually having to set up a bank and sort of incur all of those capital costs. So the area that excites me, and that I think we can make a big difference in our clients' lives, is around payment.
Okay. Yeah, I suppose that's sort of, as you say, the bottom line, because if you look at those transactions that MTN does, to do 54 billion transactions a month, you need proper payment systems. That's ways of doing that. Rian, thanks so much. It was really fascinating chatting to you about this new venture. And I wish you luck and enjoy this adventure.